Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome to the show, 908 on KDXU. A reminder, tomorrow I'll have Mayor Randall and Challenger Jimmy Hughes on this program. Jimmy will take the first half and Michelle will take the second half. And then on Thursday, we have all four candidates for St. George City Council. Jamie Levitt, Greg Aldred, Natalie Larson, and Michelle Tanner will be on the show on Thursday. So, hold on to those ballots for a couple of days longer till you get to hear them all personally and then make that decision for yourself. Right now I have Chief of Police Kyle Whitehead on the air with me. Hi, Kyle. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thank you.
Appreciate you coming. Now, I called Tiffany earlier this month and I said, Tiffany, I'm retiring. I'd really like to have Chief Whitehead on one more time before I retire. And even though someone else was actually scheduled for today from the police department, you were very gracious to accept and come in. I appreciate it, Kyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And a pleasure to be on the radio with you one last time representing the police department. And congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It looks like I'm going to be on the rest of this week and next week, and that'll be it for
great.
Me. So,
great. Well, last time with us.
Last time with the police department, for sure. And a great opportunity to kind of talk about the police department and some of the things that I have learned over the years and some of the stuff I haven't learned and maybe learn a little bit more about what the future holds for St. George PD. So no secret, this is a crazy growing community. And the police department, I talked to the city later. They have their 20-year plans and their 50-year plans and all that stuff. But do you have to do that kind of thing, too, as the chief of police? Do you go, okay, here's the 20-year plan for the St. George Police Department? Or is that something you kind of let them handle?
No, so a few years ago, we actually put together a plan to try and estimate, you know, where things were going to go over the next 5 years. I believe it was 2022 that we did that.
Okay.
What we found, though, is the community, the needs for public safety, particularly law enforcement and policing in the community, are so unique, and it changes from year to year. And so we put this plan together. It worked for the first year, and, you know, we tried to follow up pretty closely. Uh-huh. The second year, we had to make a few adjustments, and then the third year, it no longer really fit. And so we try and make our plan a little bit more broad and a little more generic, but we still try and plan for the future. Certainly, as we're, you know, right now, for example, the new city hall's almost finished. Uh-huh. We'll take over the old city hall as part of our police operations. We have our current police building, and so we'll have two buildings, and that's long past due. We've been bursting at the seams in that building. We've remodeled multiple times. People are working out of closets and little spaces just to have a little bit, and so and we've had to push some of our operations out into other parts of the city, but now we'll be able to pull all of our people back and have everybody centrally located. But as the city grows, you know, down south, look at the Southern Parkway and all that southern area with all the planning down there. At some point, I would suspect we'll have to, and we've already started talking about maybe what a police precinct looks like down there, or even a city, maybe a satellite city office, where people, rather than have to come up here to deal with utility issues or all that, maybe there's something down south. And so those are things that we continually have to be working on and thinking ahead so it doesn't catch us off guard. And now we're scrambling trying to figure out how we're going to address an issue.
The population, it's a guesstimate because we don't really have new numbers since the census in 2020, but it's about 105, 110,000 somewhere in there in the city of St. George. Is that about right?
Yeah, I've heard anywhere from 105 to 110.
Is there a number nationwide that number of police officers per population, is there a number you guys shoot for?
So the FBI in their statistical analysis, they have like these parts per thousand or officers per thousand.
Okay.
And what you find, though, is it depends on the community and it depends on the services that they offer.
Yeah.
You know, back east, officers per thousand they're greater than they seem to be out west in the western part of the United States. But that doesn't always, I had a staffing analysis done a couple of years ago on the police department trying to get an idea. And it's a scientific approach. You hire a consultant to come in. They analyze the department and tell you, you know, areas that maybe you need more. And the hard thing with those just blanket numbers, you know, we want this many officers per 1,000 people is right. if you have other needs, like we have a bike patrol. They're very proactive. They go out, they help with the homelessness, they help with our trails, they help with our high-density housing, and it really areas that our patrol officers, our officers in police cars, can't get.
Right.
And so if you take that away and you just go by this standard part officer per 1,000, you lose out on some of that. And so a lot of it is based on community need and you know, the direction we get from the council and from the community. What are the priorities? Do we want to feel safe on our trails? If we're seeing problems in our housing, you know, high density housing. And so our goal is to keep the crime as low as possible, right?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And keep it a small town feel.
Well, you know, and the numbers would be drastically different depending on the density of the city, too. I mean, you might have 100,000 people in there in, you know, a much smaller area than in St. George. I mean, you talked about Exit 2, and, you know, then you've got Bloomington, and you've got St. George. I mean, this part of the downtown St. George, we're very spread out, geographically.
We are. The other thing you have to consider, though, is when you look at our population, is, yes, during, the census says 105,000, 110,000, but during the daytime, where does everybody come to shop, to work? A lot of our surrounding communities, and I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but they're still kind of bedroom communities.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that are going on in this area, you know, you want to come to Costco and you want to go to different stores that the malls and things like that. You come to St. George. And so our population, and then you have the university. And so that population actually swells pretty significantly during the day. And then the weekend.
I was going to say, that doesn't even count happens on the weekend.
And we all know what that's like with traffic and restaurants trying to get in to eat somewhere. It's just crazy.
And then you throw in things like the marathon and the Huntsman World Senior Games, and for a long time the Ironman, and you can't really do the math then, I guess, on our population is X, because that population changes very much.
Yeah, it does change, but fortunately we have a great community and a place that people want to come. You know, you look at when I started my career, it seemed like we were really busy through the springtime. Starting,
let's give me a year.
I started in 1999.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we were busy usually starting the home show, Parade of Homes weekend. That's kind of when things started ramping up and all the weekends got busy.
Yeah, February. Yeah.
And it went to probably just before the summer. You know, you had a lot of sports events, a lot of
icebreakers and all that.
Yeah, lots of things. And then the summer comes around and everything kind of, you know, people stop coming because it's hot and it's miserable and nobody wants to come on vacation here. And then it would pick up again in the fall.
Right.
We really don't see that as much anymore. It seems like we're seeing people, you know, just year-round. There are people just coming to St. George. And a lot of it's because of the national parks and a lot of the recreation that's being offered. I think there's been a lot of advertisement about Southern Utah and what we have to offer, and so that's probably caused a little of that influx. And now the word's out. Everybody likes to come here.
Right.
And the weekends are often busy.
We get a lot of people now, and this isn't necessarily my sentiment, but I hear a lot of people say, come and visit, and then go home, please.
Yeah.
Don't stay.
Yeah.
So we're talking with Chief Kyle Whitehead from the St. George Police Department. How long have you been chief now, Kyle?
It's 5.5 years.
Does anybody call you Kyle anymore, or is it just Chief?
Kyle's
Chief
this, fine. Chief that. It's kind of awkward when I'm out, like in the public. The other day I was walking through a store, and I saw somebody, and they looked vaguely familiar, and they said, "Hey, Chief." Sometimes people just say, "Hey, Chief," and I don't even recognize them. My kids always get a kick out of it, but I'm like, Kyle's fine.
I understand that. I've always been curious, the relationship of the jail to St. George Police. The jail's run by the county. And is there a jail in St. George, a holding place in St. George at all, or does every arrest you go straight out to Purgatory?
Yeah, every custody arrest goes out to the county jail.
Okay.
We don't have any holding facilities.
Did there used to be 30 years ago or before Purgatory?
Well, before Purgatory, the jail was under what's now the City Commons building across the street from the city office. There's a jail area down in the basement. The city now owns that. We just use it for storage. There are old jail cells down there.
Okay.
But I don't think the city, there was, and I could be wrong, you'd have to ask a historian, but I think there was a city jail like back in the way early 1900s, okay. But yeah. I couldn't speak to that accurately. But no, with our relationship in the sheriff's office, we get along very well. You know, we've really been fortunate here. It's funny, I was talking just the other day to somebody who was mentioning how you sometimes get into these areas with law enforcement and there's kind of this, a little bit of conflict and territorial stuff. And we just don't see that here. We've had such, you know, number one, we've got a good community that supports all law enforcement. Number two, I think we've had good people in leadership roles, and I'm probably a weakling here, so but you know, Sheriff Brooksby does a phenomenal job, and willing to lend a hand and help out, and just has great staff, and we certainly need them, and sometimes they need us, and we help each other out.
I'm curious, so if you make it, say we're in Western St. George, Sunset, right over there, and you make an arrest, that's a pretty good jaunt from Sunset over to Purgatory. I mean, that's probably a half an hour drive, right?
Yeah.
So does that present some problems for your St. George Police Department?
It occasionally does. Fortunately, we've got pretty good staffing now, and so it doesn't seem to, but probably... Oh man, around 2021, we had some staffing issues and it became challenging at times. Mm. Back when I was a young police officer, on the weekends, we used to have reserve police officers. They would come in and, like on a Friday and a Saturday night, they would staff a transport van.
Oh.
And then that van's job would just be go around and pick up the prisoners and haul them out to the jail. And so we had a couple of officers that were just assigned that. At some point, we may have to get back to that. Fortunately, I don't think we're there yet.
Okay.
But I do hear there's some shifts where it's just crazy busy. I remember a few times working a graveyard shift. Somebody on the west side, like you said, over by Dixie Downs or Green Valley, gets an arrest. Then about the same time, there's an arrest downtown or maybe closer to the east side towards Washington. And the officer that's coming across town, he'd pick up the other prisoner, too, and take
carpool.
Yeah, so we'd carpool and get two, okay. two in one. And then the officer that's makes the arrest, he just jumps on his computer, does the booking remotely. And then the officer, by the time he's out there, he, you know, does his booking, signs both probable cause statements, and we're good to go.
One of the things unique about St. George is we have our own regional airport that is owned and operated by the city. How does that affect the police department? How much policing do you have to do when it comes to the airport?
It doesn't take a lot of resources down there. We're right at that. I've heard we're right at that size that when they expand the terminal in the next few years, we will have to put officers down there while flights. I believe it's when flights are departing. The FCC has certain requirements.
Oh.
And so we will be at that point. We'll have to staff up at least one police officer down there in the terminal. Right now, we just respond as needed. And I think by there's a certain time frame that we have to respond with any in-progress call. We have to be able to respond within a certain period of time. Most of our calls, maybe I'm speaking incorrectly, but last I had looked, most of our calls down there typically deal with people bringing weapons through TSA, right? Forget and leave a bullet in your carry-on or something, and it goes through, and now they have to shut the TSA thing down until an officer can respond. And so those are probably a lot of our things. We had a death the other day. I don't know if you heard.
Oh.
An airplane flying from Vegas. I don't know if it was leaving or arriving at Vegas, but there was a medical emergency on board. And Southwest flight.
So they had to land here.
They had to land here.
Okay.
And the person, unfortunately, was deceased. But, that was kind of unique. And so we do occasionally get those calls for service down at the airport.
Okay. I'm just trying to picture that in my head. I'm on an airplane flying from somewhere to somewhere, and the person next to me dies. That's hard to fathom, you know, to think about. I mean, you're irritated if they're, you know, if they have some sort of annoying personal habit, but for them to then die, that's, you know, wow. I don't know if I'd enjoy that at all.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, would you say, I guess one of the things I'm getting at is it feels like your department is really unique in some of the things that you have to deal with, unlike any other department, maybe in the country, because you have all the prisoners have to go out to purgatory, and then, of course, you have to deal with an airport. You have a bunch of school resource officers, which are, that's not that unusual. Police departments all over the country do that. But, and then, you know, in such a large geographical area, it's a, you're really stressed, aren't you, as far as the things that are asked of the St. George Police Department?
Yeah, I don't know that we're particularly unique. I think there's a lot of departments that do a lot of the things we do, but are there other departments that have all of the issues or the things that we have to be able to work with? I don't know, but it does pose challenges. Going back to that, if you just stick with that FBI statistic, the how many officers per thousand people, you know, you look at us geographically, and I think I've talked about this before, how spread out our city is.
Yeah.
And we kind of have these choke points, right? We have the freeway, we have the river, we have ridges on both sides, mm-hmm. and then we have open space in between. This isn't like cities that just everything's all together and you have streets that, you know, several ways. And so sometimes our response times are a little bit higher. And that's one of the things we've been working on the last few years, is trying to get our response times down, because we realize we've got to be able to, especially those emergency calls, respond in a timely manner. And so, but as we spread out, it unfortunately gets a little difficult.
The other unique thing is we have the freeways zoom right through town, and you get people from Vegas or California coming up, and you get people from up north coming down, and that presents, I guess, its own special set of problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate in that, you know, we're close enough to Vegas and even Salt Lake, most people just pass on through, but occasionally it can bring some problems. I just saw in a news article this morning that it looked like the sheriff's office had come across some fentanyl pills on a traffic stop. So we know there's a lot of drugs. I suspect there's human trafficking that goes on, you know, because you have Salt Lake, Denver, Las Vegas. Those are some pretty big cities. But I think we're lucky for the most part that type of criminal behavior doesn't usually stop here. Now, we do have drug issues, certainly, but we're still a pretty how would I put it? We're just a good community where people, criminals don't seem to want to stop here and do their thing.
Well, I think, I mean, the message I've seen is if they are going to stop here and do something, you guys are going to, you know, you're going to come down on them. And that's exactly what us citizens want to see.
Yeah, and we focus on the small things. You know, sometimes people ask, well, why is it so important that going back to, like, curfew, for example, there's some people that vehemently disagree with curfew. Yeah. Why are you harassing kids? Let them be kids, and smoking tickets and things like that. But what you find is if you focus on the small things, the order maintenance type of things, it prevents the larger problems from occurring.
Well said. Tell me about your relationship with the Utah Highway Patrol. Obviously, I mean, you work well with them, right? You're friends with them, and you work together. But it's such a unique thing. My wife was a court clerk for a long time, and if someone got pulled over on I-15 and it was within Washington City boundaries, then she would get that ticket. And I assume the same is if, you know, if it's St. George boundaries, you would get that ticket too. But there's also so many other things, and we talked about the drugs on the freeway and stuff. But how does that all work with the St. George PD and Utah Highway Patrol?
So we've, just like with the sheriff's office, we have a very good working relationship with UHP. We're fortunate that, you know, they've got a helicopter down here. Mm-hmm. When we have issues that we may need some extra help, they send down extra troopers. And so we've really been fortunate to have a good relationship. But typically they focus on the freeway and the state roads. That's typically where they are. Now, they have police certification and power, just like the county sheriff's deputies do, and, you know, countywide, statewide. And so, you know, you could be in downtown St. George on a residential street, and a trooper could pull you over and write you a ticket or address any mm-hmm. criminal violation. Primarily they're out on the freeway trying to keep people safe and deal with those situations. So we all kind of have our little jurisdictional areas, mm-hmm. but we certainly will help one another out. It's not uncommon to see St. George police out on the freeway helping with something, or UHP or the county coming into St. Right. George.
Well, you mentioned state roads. So would we see a highway patrolman on SR9 or 18 normally when it's not... I mean, isn't that sheriff territory? I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah, you still see the troopers patrol those roads. You may not see them as often as, like, SR9, for example. I think Hurricane Police probably primarily focus on there. Where I notice UHP tends to go into the more rural state roads or parts of the county.
Okay.
And so you'll see them like SR7. Right, you don't see as many. It's a little more open down there, so you'll see troopers focusing down there.
That's the road,
I-15, obviously, yeah. SR18 north of St. George. You know, that's county, but also the troopers will go up, even up to Enterprise, and do those things.
I talked about this the other day on my show. There's a section, you're coming from the airport. It's about Desert Canyon, I think is the name of it. And the free, it separates, and it looks like there's going to be two lanes, one for you to go straight and one for you to go right. But it's actually the lane on the left is opposite direction. And I was following somebody, and they were confused. I clearly probably hadn't been on this road before, and they actually started off, you know, going up the wrong direction just for maybe 20 seconds. And then they saw the do not enter signs and everything, and they realized, and they put their blinker on and moved over and got into the right lane. But I had a couple people text me when I was talking about this. Said, yeah, that area can be a little bit confusing. Do you know the area I'm speaking about, and is there something we can do about
where,
it?
Is that where the lanes go from single lane each direction and it splits and becomes the divided highway?
Well, except for I was coming from the airport, so I was coming back toward town, and at that point, it looks like there's going to be a lane to go stay on SR7 and a lane to go off of it, but in fact, that second lane is the lane coming the other direction, and so you have to stay right, and this person that I was following did not stay right.
Yeah,
they went left.
I'm not familiar with that area enough. I don't drive it much, but maybe we'll have to go down there and have a look at it, but certainly that would be, because it is a state road, that would be the state that would need to assess that and address it if there's a problem.
Should have heard my wife screaming at them, no, don't go there. She was, obviously they couldn't hear her, but.
Well, eventually that will be a divided highway. If you drive, so if you come from I-15 and you get just before the airport, you'll notice those, they merge to a one lane each direction. But if you notice it's still graded, I believe it's on the left-hand side, eventually it will be a divided highway. And it does that all the way until it connects into SR9, I believe. And so at some point, that'll be divided most of the way.
I have a listener question on a text. I have a question for the officer, the chief. How come the city has to have an undercover black Toyota Tundra truck pulling people over? It's brand new, has dark tinted windows. It's a dark black or charcoal color, and it sits around the city and pulls people over, and no one would have known that was a cop. Why?
Well, that's a good question. So a couple of times a week, if you follow our social media, you see we're out doing Traffic Tuesdays and Traffic Thursdays. What that is that's an opportunity for all of us that are able to get involved in traffic education and enforcement.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah,
we all see the problems with traffic. I drive an unmarked SUV, and unfortunately, I see a lot of red light runners. And I don't have the time always to address it.
It's so sad. I see it, and I'm not a police officer, so
correct.
I know what you're talking about.
And so, likely, this is one of our employees that's in an administrative role, but they want to jump out on a traffic-focused day and take a little time and help educate the community, whether that's through just a warning or maybe a citation. I have people ask me about this from time to time. They get frustrated, for example, about unmarked police vehicles. And my question is always, well, do you think we should only be driving responsibly when there's marked police cars around?
Mm.
Or should we always be driving responsibly, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we're always just really focusing, and that's always my frustration with driving, is sometimes we don't give it, these cars have become so automated that sometimes we don't give it the attention it deserves. And we start getting distracted. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on my way over here today. I'm thinking about my calendar today and how am I going to make it all fit? And I wasn't probably focused on what I should have been doing. And so I don't think, I guess from my perspective, and we can agree to disagree, but it shouldn't matter if we're in marked police cars or unmarked police cars. We should always be obeying the law.
I actually have, my attitude has changed about that over the years. I used to kind of feel like this person that texted in saying, hey, that's not really fair, you know, that you would do that to us. But I got pulled over once by it was on the freeway on I-15 by a Mustang, 5.0, you know, liter supercharged Mustang. And I was like, that's just not
fair. Was that in Iron County?
It might have been, okay. Yeah. I'm like, that's just not fair. Are you kidding me? You know, here I pass this unmarked UHP, it's a Mustang, and then all of a sudden he flicks his lights on, but... I kind of voiced that to him. I was like, hey, you know, I didn't even know you were a cop. That's not really fair. And he goes, so would you have slowed down if I had markings on the side of my car? I'm like, well, yeah. And he goes, there's the problem right there. You're only willing to obey the law when you know somebody's looking at you. And I was like, you kind of have a point there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and it is a good point. And as I've aged, and I'm just about to turn 60, as I've aged, I realize that, you know, really who needs to go? There are very few reasons why you would need to go 20 over, 30 over the speed limit. Yeah. I mean, they would be extreme things, you know. Maybe if your wife's having a baby and you want to get her to the hospital, sure. That might be something where you could almost justify it or, you know, maybe somebody's holding a gun to your head or something. But really, honestly, there's just not really any good reason to go that fast.
Well, and I look at it too, you know, in my career, I've seen the harm caused by inattentive driving,
yeah.
Both property
yeah.
damage and physical damage to people
yeah.
and death. And so it's just not worth it. And sometimes people think, well, you know, it's not going to happen to me. And those are the people that, you know, those are the ones telling the story saying, I didn't think it would ever happen to me.
Yeah.
And so it's really tragic. And, you know, the other thing is I think we've just got to sometimes be a little bit more attentive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with Chief on this one, folks. Sorry, I guess I'm getting old. Because,
but that's okay.
I feel
that way. If people
disagree,
they're more than welcome to.
All right, we're going to get a weather break in and talk more with Chief after this. I do, right now, I want to give away, I'm calling it my brunch, a breakfast-lunch combo. $10 to the Donut Run, $10 to Angelica's. Text me right now, 435-467-5842, and text brunch to me at 435-467-5842. We'll give that out to you as we go to weather here. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. It's 9:38 on this Tuesday morning, the 28th day of October. And by the way, Chief Whitehead is here. It is National Chocolate Day, Chief.
Oh, it is?
Yes. So oh, okay. I think it would be appropriate at some point today for us to engage in some sort of chocolate interactive moment.
That sounds delicious.
Yes. Are you a milk or dark or
white?
I like dark too.
And I think if it was, you know, just a general chocolate, I like Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh yeah. It's hard to beat.
They're just great.
Years ago, Kyle, I owned a vending business, and in a vending business, you get overload of everything, right? You got your Snickers and your Twix and all these different things, and Reese's, and we had soda machines too, so there was all the different sodas. But I was a sucker for if there was a new product out there, and when I was in the vending business, a new product came out called Reese's Sticks. Reese's Sticks it's the Reese's peanut butter cup. Kind of theme. It's chocolate and peanut butter, but then they have like it's wafers on the
right.
Inside.
Yeah, I remember though. They still have them.
They're around, but they're not very common. And I swear, every time I go and buy one, nobody else has bought any out of the box. But
yeah,
I love.
Got to check
man.
The expiration date.
That is my
sure.
yeah. That is my go-to treat. Reese Sticks. I love those things, even though they're not dark chocolate, but they're still darn good.
Some milk chocolate's still
yeah.
good.
Yeah, you're right. As long as it's got peanut butter in there.
There you go.
Oh, it is, the 28th day of October. My brother, who died 27 years ago, 28 years ago, it's his birthday today. So happy birthday, Gordon, somewhere up there, wherever he is.
Nice.
We're talking police with Kyle Whitehead. Did I ever ask you, so I had a missionary companion, last name Whitehead, from Spanish Fork.
Seems like you may have asked me.
Yeah.
I don't have any immediate relatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine all are down here.
Okay.
So
cool. And you are a native son of Washington County, right?
Yes.
Which high school did you go to?
I went to Pine View.
You're a
Back
Pine View
when
guy.
I was in high school, there were only two. Well, there was Hurricane, but here in
yeah.
St. George, it was Pine View and Dixie.
Pine.
And then my senior year, everybody will be able to guess my age now. My senior year, they opened Snow Canyon.
Okay.
So
and that would have been 94
okay. is when it opened.
Yeah.
First class was 95.
And we moved here in 93, and so my first year really covering sports, I was a sports writer for the paper. The Spectrum used to cover local stuff. Now, mm-hmm. now Spectrum, I don't even know what they're doing anymore. But back in the day, I was a sports editor, and we covered that brand new school. Okay. And it was one of the very few schools ever in the history of Utah that was almost immediately competitive in football. They were winning championships. I think this second year they played for the state championship, third year they won the state championship, which is pretty amazing. So
yeah, my brother played football. I think he graduated in 97.
Yeah,
they
were pretty darn good back then.
Pretty good team
yeah.
back around that time.
Touch gold, right, I think, or grab gold or something like that. They have the gold helmets
yeah.
and everything. So Very cool. And in fact, that reminds me, I might as well mention it. This Friday, Snow Canyon, as well as Pineview, Crimson Cliffs, and Hurricane, they're all playing playoff games, second round of the playoffs. And Snow Canyon is hosting, now I need to think about it, Green Canyon, Snow Canyon. So it'll be a green game.
Oh, wow.
Green and blue and gold Warriors against the green and blue and white Wolves of Green Canyon.
Are these regions or state?
The second playoffs. Round of the state playoffs.
Oh, good.
Second round of the state playoffs. Wow.
The only drawback is it's Halloween on Friday.
Yeah.
You'll go trick-or-treating. Right?
I guarantee you at the game I'll be at any of the games, there will be dance companies dressed as zombies from Thriller dancing at halftime of these games.
That's fun. We're going to Tucson tomorrow to see Thriller.
See
so
Thriller.
That's kind of our
very cool
family thing.
Has the police had, I mean, Tucson is kind of catered for a little bit nicer class of people. I hate to put it that way, but I can't imagine there'd been a lot of law enforcement need out that way, has there?
That's in Santa Clara Ivins jurisdiction.
Oh, right. It's out
they have their
city
police
anyway.
Department.
That's right. Yeah, good point.
Typically, when we've gone, though, it seems like I see a couple of officers the nights that we've
kind of keeping an eye on stuff.
So, yeah, usually I think they hire security.
Okay. Yeah, that's understandable. I just got a text. Let's see. Please ask the chief to give an update on the St. George shelter. When will the shelter open for volunteers? Do you know anything about that, chief?
Yeah, so right now we're underway trying to work through the plan and get the plan all finalized. There will be a new animal shelter. They've found some city ground. It's down by the Christensen Park, between the Christensen Park and the sewer treatment plant.
So this was land already owned by the city,
yes.
So you didn't have to worry about trying to find expensive land like we have right now.
Okay. Yeah, and so that, I don't still have a timeline on when they'll break ground, but we do have a follow-up meeting on November 13th with the city council and a work meeting to talk about that. But that's still a work in progress, so it'll probably be another year and a half or 2 years before we're ready to get that all done.
So tell me the location again.
It's down by the Christensen Park in Bloomington. If you turn and go towards the sewer treatment plant, so turn and go west, it's down in that area.
And that is where it's going to be? It's not a maybe or
yes.
It's pretty much? Okay,
yeah, good. That's
because that was kind of the gist of the question is I've heard it could be out there and it is going to happen.
It is. Yeah, okay. Unless, I mean, I guess they could still change it. The hard thing is we were looking around for property. The city doesn't own a lot of property and to purchase property right now, it's kind of expensive.
Oh,
so we figured it might be best just to do it on land that we already owned, and that seemed like a good location.
Yeah, okay, cool. Tell me about the animal shelter a little bit. We've had at times over the years, I've been doing this almost 7 years now in this chair, we've had representatives from the animal shelter in first of all, I'm really impressed with the officers you have working down there, but there is a lot of, I think, some of the animal rights peoples get a little upset on, you know, no kill shelter, you know, what do you do with the animals if nobody wants to adopt them and stuff? Tell us about kind of the city's stance on all that.
Yeah, so, I may misspeak on some of this. I'm a little embarrassed to say that's one part of the operations I've never worked with.
You've never worked there, yeah.
But I think technically we're a no-kill shelter. Now, just because it's designated as a no-kill doesn't mean that animals aren't ever not euthanized, right? Mm-hmm. They'll still, there's a certain percentage, I think, but there's a process that has to go through.
Okay.
Most of the animals, it's very rare that we euthanize an animal down there. We have great partnerships with some of our shelters in the area, the private shelters, and so they help take on some of those when we start to get a little bit full. And then we do like free adoptions and those things when we start to, our goal is we want to get these pets or these animals back out in the community, and we don't want, it's interesting, so humans, you know, there's a lot of studies to say if you institutionalize a person, you know, they kind of become hardened and all that, right?
Uh-huh.
When they're in prison, same thing goes for animals.
Oh, really?
If an animal spends a lot of time in that type of an environment, they become less social, and so our goal is always to try and turn them around. You know, when we get a stray come in, we make sure that it's got its shots, that it's been fixed, and then we immediately try and get it back out into the community. And the longer it takes, sometimes the more difficult that is. But again, we do have some great community partnerships with some other shelters in the area, and we really try and work with them so that we get these animals back out. into a family.
Do you know, and maybe I'm stepping in areas you don't know about, but do you know, are there particular breeds or types of animals that are really hard to get back out there?
Seems like cats are always a struggle.
Cats, right? Really?
Cats, we always seem to have I shouldn't say always, but most of the times when I hear we're at capacity, it seems to be with cats.
Really? That's interesting. I would have thought kitty cats, right? It'd be easy.
Now, we do get rabbits. Sometimes we'll get rabbits that are
around Easter,
hard,
maybe.
Yeah. Or we had a few months ago, one of the shelter staff was telling me that they had a couple of rabbits, and they thought they had determined the sex appropriately. And so they had, and about two or three litters later, they realized what the problem was. Anyway, I guess they can get away from you pretty quickly. So
rabbits, there's the old joke about rabbits and reproducing, right?
Yeah.
And there's a reason that they mention that, because it's true.
But we've got great staff down there. They work hard. They've got a lot going on in the city and trying to keep up with all the busy. We've got the way our shelter is divided. We have the shelter side, and then we have the animal service officers that are out in the field, and they're like police officers but dealing with the animal issues, and they overlap. We've outgrown. I think our current shelter was built in 1980. Or so, and it really hasn't expanded other than we created some outside area for the animals to stretch their legs a little bit. But the inside, it's pretty crowded in there, and so we're well past due for the need of a new shelter.
How old is that shelter? Well, I was a ninth grader when it was opened up, so that's how old it is.
I was four. I would have been four, Andy.
We're going to take a time out. When we come back, I do have something very serious I want to ask the chief about the things that have been in the news a little bit lately and how St. George Police Department participates in this when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Andy. It's 9:51 on KDXU. I'm with Chief Kyle Whitehead from the St. George Police Department, and the chief has graciously agreed to come on the show, and probably the last time I'll be interviewing a member of the police department, at least in this capacity. So I appreciate you coming, Kyle.
Thank you.
We've become friends over the years. And
it's been nice.
Kyle drew the short straw this time. He had to come on the radio. I don't know. Some people like doing the radio. Some people hate doing the radio. It just depends.
I don't know. I frankly like to come here and talk, as long as nobody asks any too hard a question.
Yeah,
even if they do, heck, I'm
trying to make it for it. Not too uncomfortable for you. Lately in the news, it seems like every other day it's mentioned that someone is arrested or charged or going to, sentenced for CSAM or child sex abuse materials on their computer. And I just wonder, how does it go about that you've busted? I mean, obviously every case is different, but how does it come about that someone gets in trouble for something like that?
Yeah, there are a few different ways. One way is people, it's discovered through a family member, maybe a victim confesses, or, a family member divulges that they've been acting out in these horrible ways. It also comes through there's different ways that we can investigate. There's tools out there online that we have. Computers will go out and they'll actually look for this material, and they'll capture the IP addresses, and then through a process, we can determine where those are coming from and who it belongs to.
At which point you could then maybe issue a warrant and get that computer or whatever, and then find out if it is in fact true.
And it's becoming more and more difficult. I mean, with the dark web, and every time law enforcement tries, gets kind of where we feel like we're getting caught up, there are new ways to
do this. Yeah.
And so the state has a full-time ICAC team, we call it. It's Internet Crimes Against Children.
Yeah.
And they oftentimes will send us referrals. They've got a computer that just goes 24/7 and it's capturing these. And anything that may pop up in St. George, we'll get the referral down here. And then we have detectives that are specially trained in doing these investigations. And so that's probably the second way. The third way is we'll go out and do these traveler operations. And I think that's what you're probably talking about recently. You've seen in the news, it seemed like there were several, they did one up north, and several people were arrested. I think there was a Lehigh person, somebody from Texas.
Yeah.
I read one just the other day that was likely from a traveler op, where they'll actually have undercover detectives communicate online.
As if they are an underage child.
As if they're children, and then catch people that way. They'll get them to meet up and then arrest them.
Is this a more difficult process than regular policing? Is there a more involved, or is this just kind of part of the job?
Well, it's part of the job, but it is difficult. Difficult in a few areas. Number one, you know, it's difficult to find that these people have been victimized. You know, I think of a lot of crimes that involve victims, and I can't think of anything, you know, even homicide, you know, but to steal a child's virtue and purity, that to me is just, it turns my stomach. And so, yeah, it's difficult in that these are hard things to work through. It's hard for the victims. Frankly, they're often never the same again. As they get into adulthood, you know, you and I were talking just a little bit ago about when they may develop an intimate relationship as an adult, get married. Sometimes there's a lot of trauma that comes back because of that. And so it's really hard for them. They are very difficult to investigate. You can't just give this case to a patrol officer or any detective. They have to be trained to go about the investigations in a certain way. You don't just interview the victims like you would, say, someone steals some money or someone, you know, assaults you. Right. We have a special place here in town, our Children's Justice Center, where we take the victims. And there's a certain process to go through the interview. Because if you don't, you can introduce information and it
You got to be careful.
And so you have to approach it very carefully. And so it is very sensitive, and it's something that you have to have somebody trained, and you have to go about it the right way.
It is. I think you're like me. It's one of those crimes that make me so angry, and I wish I could do something about it because of, as you mentioned, the really lifelong, life-affecting process that happens to a victim. If a five-year-old girl is abused, she's not going to forget it when she's 45 or 55 or whatever. It's going to be in her mind for the rest of her life, and that's why it makes me so angry. I can't abide it.
It's hard. And then the flip side of this is, I don't want to make it seem like people that are accused are always victims, but I have seen in my career in several instances where I remember very specifically one case where a person made an allegation against another person and they were criminally charged only to recant years later. So now again, dude, some might say, well, they probably are, you know, somebody pressured them to recant. I don't know, but I suspect that may happen as well. And so it's really hard. These are very difficult because as soon as you're accused, you know, if I'm accused of this, it's going to get out, right? Now, it may not get out in the media, but it's going to get out maybe in my neighborhood. It's going to get out in the social circles, and people get labeled that way.
The human brain, we go guilty until proven innocent, not the other way, unfortunately.
We do. And so it's hard. It's just hard all the way around.
I had a relative of mine who was a school administrator, got accused of something. Well, you know, everything in the schools is on video, and the person that did the accusing didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Said, well, he did this and this and this. Well, they went to the video, and he didn't do any of that stuff, and so he was able to be exonerated. But, you know, it's just like you were saying, sometimes, you know, maybe they have an ulterior motive.
Yeah. And typically kids aren't vindictive that way. What we usually will see is that maybe there's a bad marriage or a divorce, and the other parent will start introducing things you know, coaching them. And that's typically where we see that, because kids don't really know how to be vindictive. Now, teenagers, maybe. I've got a couple of teenagers, and sometimes they can be a little bit, I don't want to say vindictive, but they know how to play the heartstrings. Manipulative. That's the better word.
About out of time, Kyle. I just wanted to say I really appreciate you being willing every time. I'll come on. We'll talk. Sure, let's have some fun.
Well, it's really, it's I've grown to really enjoy our meetings, and I hope the community finds value in this. It's something that, as a police department, we're very passionate about. We want to be a very open police department and talk about things, and it doesn't mean we're always going to agree. And I would just encourage listeners out there that please, if you have questions or concerns, it doesn't have to be when you hear it on the radio, but call into the police department. And we have a lot of experts in a lot of areas, and we certainly are always willing to help where we can and have conversations. But I just want to wish you the best. This is exciting for you. And don't be a stranger. You have my, I think you'll have the same cell number. Hopefully you'll keep it.
Yeah, I'm
you'll
keeping have mine. Yeah. I've had the same number for like 30 years. So I'm not changing it now.
Good.
But Kyle Whitehead, Chief of Police. Kyle, it's been a pleasure. And again, you know, we'll have to go meet at Blaze Pizza and go have some pizza sometime because we both love that place. So, but thanks so much. And get some chocolate. It's National Chocolate today. Oh, yeah. So go find yourself some chocolate. And all of you out there, too, go find yourself some chocolate. Again, tomorrow on the show, Michelle Randall and Jimmy Hughes. Thursday on the show, we'll have Levitt, Aldred, Tanner, and Larson. So, we're going to get you all ballot ready for the election. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.